Chapter 12. What the fresh fucking hell? A roaring inferno devoured the water in front of me. But despite my best efforts, I could not unglue the soles of my feet from the bottom of the fountain in order to jump back. When I lifted my head so I could look around for help, I noticed I was suddenly transported to a different time and place. Instead of standing in the flaming fountain at Gellivane's estate, I was suddenly standing naked in a very familiar clearing surrounded by an eerie blue glowing forest. What did Rylan call this place again? The Dead Zone? The Dark Space? Realm. The Dark Realm. Somehow I had managed to fall into that liminal space between waking and dreaming my foster son was so worried about. I pressed my thumbnail into the cut Mech had made into my finger earlier when he was demonstrating the numbing effects of the Kabar. Ow! I hissed, and watched as a trickle of blood traced down to my knuckle. I guess the super bark wouldn't work in the Dark Realm, and I reminded myself to be careful. Even though Rylan and I came up with our vegetable-based code word in case I landed myself here again, I didn't tell him I never planned on using it. If this place was dangerous to my physical body, it was no doubt just as dangerous to Rylan's, and taking that chance was just not an option. But I also remembered this was the place where Aventol spoke loudest to its travelers, so I readied my stance and peered into the dimness. "What are you trying to tell me?" I asked, and my voice fractured and split as if I was shouting inside a fishbowl. Nothing answered, but I felt like I had the attention of whatever presence occupied the realm. A sudden blast of heated air nearly knocked me off my feet, and I stumbled back a few steps to catch my balance. When I opened my eyes again, the forest around me was engulfed in flames. "Holy fuck!" I exclaimed, and jumped back to the center of the clearing. The inferno roared and hissed as it consumed the tree line and drew closer. The heat was incredible, and my skin felt like paper set too close to the fireplace, all tight and hot. I spun in a circle, frantically, and looked for a break in the ring of flames that I might break through and try to outrun the conflagration. "Fuck, fuck, fuck," I chanted, as no solution presented itself, and my circle of uncharred earth shrank even more. A searing pain ignited around my right forearm, and I clutched the scar the cruel Arcus Dohler gave me as his final parting gift when he died. The pain caused my stomach to clench, and my eyes were streaming with tears as the heat from the flames practically licked at my face. I slammed my eyes closed and held my breath, because I was sure the fire was a hair's breadth from swallowing me whole. A beat went by, and then another, until I finally realized I wasn't being cooked alive. The out-of-control inferno stopped just short of burning my face off, and I glared at the fire like I was offended it decided to go off script from what I was expecting to happen. "Really?" I scoffed. "What gives?" The wall of fire loomed an inch closer. "Wait, wait, wait, wait. That's okay, stop," I said, and backed up the little I could in my ever-shrinking circle of dirt. The flames still roared and hissed, but they stopped short again as if they were waiting for me to catch on to something. Now that I was panicking about being barbecue, I once again reminded myself these terrifying experiences were designed to help me in some way. At least I didn't have to fight my shadow self again in a weird symbolic drama about being my own downfall or something. Even though said lesson primed me against the fight I had with Dohler. In that duel, if I had relied on my own time-trans powers in order to defeat him, the curse he put on me would have drained my life force every time I tried to tap into it. So if that was the case, what was the reason for this wall of fire? I definitely couldn't go around it or under it, but staying here was slowly becoming not an option as I nearly stood on my tiptoes trying to stay away from the encroaching flames. "What do you want from me?" I yelled at the fire. Because it was fire, it didn't answer, of course, and part of me really just wanted to punch my way through. Through? What if... No, that was crazy. I couldn't just walk through Dante's shower curtain of hell. But what choice did I have?
Ugh. You better be right. I scolded my gut, since it was nagging me to do something totally off the cuff and potentially deadly. Then I closed my eyes and ran through the wall of fire. Instead of being waylaid by the feeling of my flesh burning off, I ended up stumbling forward and crashing down to my hands and knees in front of the ancient tithe pool back at the Sun Temple. I blinked around at the serene space and glanced at the shining surface of the mirror-like water. I remembered what happened the last time I just looked into the pool surface willy-nilly, and I rubbed absently at the scar around my arm that looked like a snake eating its own tail. But the answer I sought was just there glimmering within my reach, so I crept forward and chose to look down at my fate. A long, winding corridor filled my sight, and it reminded me a little of the underground weapons cache under Ithaca. The walls of this corridor were a bare white stone, almost like marble, and there seemed to be no end in sight. But finally, a shape began to materialize in the distance, and I hurried toward it faster and faster. As I got closer, the shape revealed itself to be two identical black doors, and the longer I stared at the doors, the more my instincts got a feel for what they were. The right door was easy because it radiated a feeling I was beginning to relate solely with Ithaca and the belonging that came with all things home, but the left door was a little more obscure. It seemed familiar but remote at the same time, like coming home to a vacant apartment after being gone for so long. The stuff was still there, but the warmth of being lived in was wholly absent. The more I pondered the second door, the more it started to dawn on me what it was, what they both were. The left door represented Earth and my old life, and I knew for certain if I chose to go through it, I would be returned safe and sound to everything I was familiar with, blue pill, Matrix style. But the right door felt like Ithaca because it represented that warm, lived-in place I had grown to associate with Aventol. Almost without my permission, my hand reached for a door.
Alex!
A deep and compelling voice caused me to rush to the surface of my subconscious, as if my waking mind was attached to a buoy. I gasped and opened my eyes, which was a mistake, because the dawning of a new day on Nada Isle just about blinded me. The strength drained out of my arms and legs, and I collapsed.
"Whoa, lad, steady,"
the Asher Lord said, as he caught my arms and prevented me from crashing down to my knees. Then before I could even adjust to being back in the waking world, Mech stood me next to him and raised my fist in the air.
"Behold, our brother Asher Brightwood has succeeded in the trials and has outlasted us all."
The duelists and the spectators who were all gathered offered up a hearty round of applause.
"Whoa, wait, it's morning?"
I slurred, as I tried to lift my shield up again, but it was proving impossible when my muscles felt like rubber noodles.
"Don't worry about the shield, son. You have passed the trials with flying colors, as my grandfather used to say,"
the jovial Ramlord said, as he took the heavy object from my stiff fingers and helped me out of the fountain.
"I knew you would take to the ceremony, but you have surprised me yet again with your fortitude."
The things he was excitedly babbling about did little to penetrate my exhausted brain, and the only thing I could think of saying was,
"Great. Another morning person."
"Oh, Alex!"
I suddenly had my arms full of a vibrant Shay who was nearly in tears as she smothered me with kisses.
Oh, husband!"
she gasped.
"When the sunrise came and you didn't drop your shield, I didn't know what to think. But Lord Mech snapped you out of your trance. Are you all right?"
Yeah,
I said, and tried to shake the cobwebs out of my head. Other than being a little tired, my strength was returning almost tenfold.
"Yeah, actually, I feel great. What was all that about? Do I win some sort of prize for being the one who held his shield up longest?"
"You gain the pride and accolades that come from being the strongest one to outlast,"
she said, and hugged me again.
"Oh, more accolades. Good," I mumbled sarcastically,
but pulled my phoenix wife closer while Vane's concubines relieved me of my shackles. I looked down at my ankles and expected to see them rubbed raw from the unforgiving metal digging into my flesh, but I was surprised to see my skin was just as pristine as usual.
"Isn't it grand?"
Shay asked, as she stepped back and then unwrapped the bandage from around her finger.
Look, mine is all healed too.
She held up her hand for me to inspect, but before I could examine her unmarred fingers, a bone-white hand seized her wrist and made her gasp.
Look at that,
Gellivane said, as he turned my wife's hand this way and that, before releasing it too quickly for me to have the opportunity to break his fingers. I saw red for a moment, and it took all of my willpower not to drag his skinny skeletal ass over to his own fountain so I could hold his head underwater for a minute, or 12. Asher Vane, I said again through gritted teeth, and moved my wife slowly behind me.
Brighthood,
the owl-like man greeted, as his jaundiced eyes pierced mine.
Impressive display of fortitude. That is a trait that will serve you well. Come, I would like to offer you a bit of extended hospitality to you and your wives.
How generous, but I'm afraid I have business with Brightwood back in the valley, Mech interjected, in a sorry-not-sorry way as he smiled a cold smile that didn't reach his eyes. You should rest, Gela. You're looking pale.
What I am is none of your business, Gavlane,
the owlman suddenly snapped, and the harsh lines and wrinkles in his ashen face were made all the harsher by his ugly sneer.
Regardless, thank you for hosting the ceremony, the Ramlord said placidly, which only seemed to add fuel to the other man's rage.
Vane honestly looked like a volcano ready to go Mount St. Helens, but at the last moment he derailed his impending explosion and replaced his indignation with a benign grin.
Good day to you both,
the magistrate of Gatetown said, with a falsely polite bow, as a disgusting smile crawled across his face.
M'lady?
Oh, what a creep, I growled, the moment he was gone.
Yes, Gela has been a thorn in my side for quite some time now,
the Ramlord agreed, and then turned to Shay.
Are you all right?
I'm fine,
she said, and she sounded more annoyed than anything.
He didn't hurt me. He was just appallingly rude.
Well, he needs to keep his oily hands off you, I said, and scowled after the owlman as he disappeared into the milling crowd.
Are you ready to go back to our campsite?
Shay asked. Yeah, but where are Zoe and Rylan? I wondered, as I finally noticed their absence. Didn't they want to come?
More than anything, my darling. But I'm afraid our Rylan developed a sickness during the night, and Zoe decided to stay with him,
she said. Rylan's not feeling well? I asked with a concerned expression. But he was fine yesterday.
Ah, not to worry, lad, Mech said, and clapped me on the shoulder with sympathy. As much as it pains us to see our children suffer, they are stronger than we think.
True, I conceded. But something about Ryland's mysterious and sudden illness didn't sit well with me, even if it was just a typical head cold. I would have to just check him out for myself in order to assuage that annoying little niggle in my gut. Speaking of my gut, a loud rumble tore out of me as if my stomach was actually trying to do an aliens on me and chew its way out of my abdomen. By the way, is there like a grab-and-go breakfast situation to look forward to, or... I asked, and the big man threw back his head and laughed.
Oh, you must be ravenous,
Mech said, as he led us from the fountain, and he traversed the long corridors of Vane's castle-like estate as if he had a map.
Typically, that is a large feasting celebration held all over the island, but I'm afraid we do not have time to partake. We must make it to the battle hall before the day gets too long.
Sure thing, I said, as Shay and I jogged down the entrance steps after the Ramlord. Let me just collect my crew, and we can meet you there.
Don't be silly, Asha,
he chuckled, and raised his hand as if he was hailing a taxi. A carriage immediately drove up, and two servants hopped down to open the doors.
I've arranged for all of us to travel in style.
When Mech meant style, he meant a full palace escort that left our humble caravan wedged in between Mech's family's carriage ahead and a plethora of guards at the front and the rear. Another bonus to the royal treatment was Mech had loaded us up with a host of amazing food that could feed an army. There were warm, sweet rolls that were in the shape of clouds, a bright green soup that tasted of citrus wheatgrass and was surprisingly refreshing, trays of fruits dipped in some type of sticky, sugary stuff, strips of meat and dried fish, cheese, and a number of other delicious items I ran out of room in my stomach before I could try. It was a little awkward to balance everything inside our carriage without a proper table or surface, but between all of us working together, we managed to get everyone fed meals on wheel style as we trundled along. Well, almost everyone.
Rylan, why don't you try some of this fragrant broth?
Shay cajoled, but the pale stable boy simply closed his eyes and rolled over to bury his face back in Zoe's dress. Zoe frowned and trailed her fingers through his sandy hair as he continued to rest with his head in her lap, and she finally looked up at me with a worried frown. When I had gotten back to the rest of the crew, Zoe filled me in on his status. Just like Shay said, he'd somehow come down with a sickness in the middle of the night that caused him to shake with fatigue, as well as made him feel nauseated. Speaking of which, going off Rylan's sudden flush that reddened the tips of his ears, I gathered he might be losing the battle with his touchy stomach. Sure enough, not even 3 seconds later, the stable boy sat bolt upright with a panicked look on his sweaty face aimed right at me. Bowden, stop the carriage! I banged a few times on the roof, and the carriage slowed just in time for me to get the poor kid out of the cab before he hurled up what little he had left in his stomach. He made it a total of 3 strides before bracing himself against a tree and letting it rip. There you go, I encouraged, and patted his back, even though I was a bit mad at him when I realized what exactly was bothering me about him being sick.
Is everything all right, Alex?
Mech asked, as he poked his head out of his carriage window. Fine, Gavlane, I said with a wave of my hand. Just give us a few moments. The Ramlord nodded his understanding and slipped back inside. When Rylan had seemingly puked his last, I had him sit down on a fallen log and take slow sips of water from a wineskin.
Thanks,
he said with one hand over his stomach while he handed the water jug back to me. Now, do you want to tell me what this is all about? I asked, and folded my arms in front of my chest.
What do you mean?
He asked as he blinked up at me innocently, but I wasn't buying it. Rylan, I thought we talked about using your ability too much, I said. And I knew I was on the right track when his shoulders hunched up towards his ears. That's why we have a code word. And I don't remember using it, so if that's the case, you were just deliberately disobeying me.
No, Dad, I'm sorry,
he stammered as great big tears filled his eyes. Having a powerful ability is not something to play around with, I chastised with my most disappointed dad glare. I've pushed myself to the state you're in and farther, and let me tell you, it's not fun.
Yes, oh no, Alex, but...
He started again, and angrily wiped away his fallen tears. No, you don't know, I snapped, and he winced as if I'd slapped him. I sighed and pinched the bridge of my nose. Didn't you learn your lesson the first time? If my first words slapped him, then these words kicked his dog, because his face immediately crumpled and he clutched himself around the middle. At the sight of him, I instantly regretted my words, and I realized dragging his painful past out just to make my point was overkill, especially now that I could see my point was pretty much made the second I raised my voice.
You're right, Alex,
he said as he tried to hold back his tears, and his face was becoming paler by the minute.
You should be rid of me.
No, I said, and closed my eyes when I realized we were back to Alex again instead of Dad. Well, maybe I needed to act more like a dad and less like a judge and jury if I wanted the title so badly, starting now. Unfortunately, Rylan's self-flagellation was already picking up steam, and because he was feeling shitty on top of everything, he apparently couldn't cope with it anymore, and so he bolted right into the forest.
Rylan!
I hollered and sprinted after him. Of course, he managed to slip through one of the thickest brambles known to man, and I actually had to pull my sword in order to hack through the obstacles in my way.
Rylan!
I yelled again, and cursed when I almost tripped over a thick, gnarled tree root.
Ah, shit! Broccoli! 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 Fuck!
The toe of my boot caught on another fucking tree root, which caused me to stumble to another stop. The thick trees were claustrophobic and dark, and I felt briefly turned around in the thicket of thorns and branches. If it weren't for the sound of retching nearby, I wasn't sure if I would have been able to catch up with him at all. As it was, the poor stable boy was forced to come to a stop so he could get sick again in the bushes. "Rylan," I sighed, and walked over to where he was still crouched on all fours as silent tears dripped off his dirt-streaked face. I approached him cautiously at first, in case he got it in him to run off again. But as I got closer, I could see he wasn't really in the state to be running in the first place. His stubbornness caused me to roll my eyes fondly at the ragamuffin, and with gentle hands, I lifted him to his feet so he was no longer kneeling in his own sick. "Hey, champ," I said, when I had relocated us to a set of boulders next to a small creek. "You all right?"
I'm fine," he said. "It's just that when you were shouting broccoli, it reminded me of green sprouts, and then I couldn't help but..."
Yikes, I said, as he dry-heaved miserably again. So I tore off a strip of my tunic and soaked it in the cold water at our feet. "I won't mention broccoli anymore."
"Please don't,"
he said with a greenish tinge to his cheeks. And I couldn't help but chuckle a little as I wrung out the cloth, folded it, and then placed it on the back of his neck. We sat there in tense silence for a few moments until I sighed and placed a finger on his knobby knee so he would look at me. "Look, I need to apologize to you," I said, and held my hand up before he could interject. "Let me finish. I reacted the way I did because, to be honest, it worries me that you can become so affected by your ability just as much as I can when I don't even know what all that entails. That's why I drew the boundary for you to only dreamwalk if you hear..."
"Oh, please don't say it,"
he whimpered and covered his eyes with one hand. "The code word," I finished mercifully. "Until I know more about what you can do, we need to play it safe."
"I understand that, Alex, I really do," he said earnestly,
but my heart still cramped at his use of my first name again.
"But I wasn't deliberately trying to disobey you. Last night was my first night coming to a tarvin ceremony. After I lay down for bed, I tried to get my mind to quiet down, but it was like everything was up too loud to ignore."
"What do you mean by that?" I asked patiently, while I turned the rag over to the cool side.
I don't know. It was like all of the duelists were having such intense nightmares, one after another. It became impossible to keep all of it out."
He finished his explanation with a small pout.
"I couldn't help it, and all night I kept falling into the dark realm."
I frowned even deeper at this. Rylan was in the dark realm? "You couldn't help but get sucked in," I clarified, as my alarm grew again. "You weren't hurt there, were you?"
"No, other than the fact I felt like I could sleep for a thousand seasons when I woke up at dawn,"
the stable boy shrugged, and I watched in curious fascination as Rylan's hand rubbed the back of his neck.
I'm sorry.
"Don't apologize for not knowing how to control your ability," I sighed again and ruffled his hair. "The responsibility lies with me to help you. I just don't know where to start quite yet. Maybe meditation? But really, I'm the one who needs to apologize for being too harsh and for being too hasty."
"You didn't even let me talk,"
he muttered, and I threw my arm around his shoulders. "I'm sorry," I said sincerely. "I will work on that in the future. Hey, maybe we can come up with another code word you could say if you ever feel like I'm running over you."
"Just don't say the B word again,"
he said, and flushed a new shade of green. "Don't worry, I won't," I promised. "But can I ask you to do me two things in the future?"
"Sure."
He gazed at me with a puzzled expression. "First," I said as I held up one finger, "no more running off."
"Okay,"
he agreed easily, but I gripped his chin so he could see how serious my face was. "I mean it, Rye. I almost thought I lost you in here." I poked him in the shoulder.
"I promise,"
Rylan said with a dutiful expression, and then frowned.
"What's the other thing you wanted me to do?"
"Oh, right," I said, and helped the poor woozy kid to his feet so we could start making our way back.
As long as you're comfortable with it, I would really like to be called Dad again. Instead of answering, Ryland just launched himself into my arms and squeezed me tight. I laughed again and patted him on the back, content to let him take as much time as he needed. Come on, I said a little while later, and steered us back the way we came. We should be heading back. I bet they're all worried about us.
Well, of course everyone's worried.
A third and very unfamiliar voice butted in, and my gaze snapped around in search of the interloper. Then from the trees above our little clearing, a hooded figure dropped down in front of us.